Hello and welcome to New World Patrice Folk Magician's Notebook, episode for April 2023. These are short monthly episodes that will offer a brief overview of folk magical topics and information that might be useful to you over the coming month. As always, we highly recommend that you also pick up a copy of a reputable and reliable almanac for folk magic, such as the Witchin's Almanac, Llewellyn's Witch's Datebook, or your local Farmer's Almanac.
Let's take a look at the moon for April 2023. Our full moon this month occurs on Thursday, April 5th, in the sign of Libra. This moon is sometimes known as the wind moon, or more commonly, the pink moon, named after the blooming of the pink phlox flowers at this time, according to the Farmer's Almanac. The new moon falls on Thursday, April 20th, while transitioning from Aries to Taurus. The month starts off waxing in Leo, making it an ideal time for any sort of preening or showing off. This may mean setting out your showier flowers to grow in the garden, or doing things like hanging mirrors and bright decorations around your home. The movement into Virgo and Libra, though, will be a time to get practical. It's great for cleaning and clearing some garden beds, so you can add new plants to them, or for doing your spring cleaning. Open your windows and doors to refresh the home, and get rid of any potentially squatting spirits you might not want around. When the moon is full on the 5th and 6th, as it's technically occurring during the wee hours of the 6th, it's a great time to set boundaries and mark your home as your own. Wards and lines of salt or brick dust at the doors and windows are great to set out here. This is also the Paschal moon, named after its place in the Jewish month of Nisan near the spring equinox. Rituals of purification work here, especially if you're coming from frameworks that honor Passover of some kind. There are several days that have historical folk magic powers here too, including Good Friday on the 7th, when the moon will enter Scorpio. Doing laundry, working, plowing, and other labor is all to be suspended, or else bad luck will result. However, baking bread on Good Friday brings good fortune, and in some English households, a Good Friday bun would be baked and kept hung from the ceiling from one year to the next for blessings and prosperity, and supposedly would never get moldy, although I wouldn't recommend eating it. On Easter Sunday, the 9th, the moon will be entering Sagittarius, and the lore says you should wear new clothes to bring good fortune. Another bit of lore says that if you can watch the sunrise on Easter, you might see the sun dancing. That's a pretty Sagittarian thing to do, so keep an eye out. The waning period will go through Sagittarius and Capricorn, making it a good time to clear out cabinets and gardens of old weeds, debris, and things that shouldn't be there. The week before the new moon will see movements through Aquarius and Pisces, which is a good time to be guarded with communications and fantasies. Best to keep secrets at this time. The new moon is in Aries, so if you like to do divination during that time like I do, you should account for particularly aggressive and salty readings being par for the course. As the month winds down, the moon travels through Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, and finally back to Leo while waxing, meaning you could do a lot of work on the above-ground plants in your garden and any sort of building or growth-based spell work designed to help you gain a better home, employment, opportunities, or attention.
Now we'll take a look at cards, divination, and proverbs for the month. Each month, Lane and I will pull a card for one another, one playing card and one tarot or oracle card. We'll indicate the meanings of those cards in general and then read them for the other person specifically as a way to get a sense of how they're read in actual practice. This month, I pulled the King of Diamonds as the primary card for Lane. The King of Diamonds is a card that usually represents a bank, money, a civil trial, or financial wisdom, but it can also be a person who is generous with their advice and knowledge. Likely, this card indicates that there's a need to be thoughtful in examining priorities, deciding where to spend and where to save, so to speak. But that can also be an emotional and social decision, too. Even more, this card has to do with seeking wise counsel and listening to those who have wisdom to give. In Lane's case, I'd say this could be a time to talk to a person in her life whom she looks up to for sage advice, or even just someone she finds engaging as an intellectual peer or equal, because they will be able to help her get through any particular obstacles she's facing in the month to come. This is augmented slightly by an additional card I pulled, a Two of Hearts. That card is often read as a coupling or intimacy card, but it can be someone with whom you have a deep connection and trust. So this month, if you're getting the King of Diamonds, take the time to sit down and talk to someone you value and really listen to them. They may give you words of wisdom you've been needing.
For this month, the tarot card I pulled for Corey is the Eight of Swords. A figure stands among eight swords stuck into the ground, three on the right, five on the left, a castle on a rocky hill in the distance. The person is bound by ropes or ties of some sort and is blindfolded. However, there are no other figures in the card. While it might seem to be a card of confinement or subjugation, it actually speaks to our willingness to be held down by our own beliefs and the beliefs of others, or simply, our own helplessness. For Corey, this card was pulled in the reverse position, which I've found conflicting meanings for. The Rider-Waite instructions indicate the eight in reverse is opposition, difficulty, that which is unforeseen, and even fatality. However, Rachel Pollack's Guide for Tarot Reading, her book 78 Degrees of Wisdom, tells of freedom beginning when we throw off our blindfolds, when we see clearly how we have arrived in whatever situation we are in, what we have done, and what we can do about it now. Of course, it's never great to get a negative card reading. I do tend to read the reversed Eight of Swords in a much more triumphant way than the other guide. I read this card as a beginning of some sort. Perhaps something with a shocking start will transpire. But it symbolizes realizing the only thing holding you back is yourself.
Our folk divination method of the month, casting lots. This is a long-standing traditional method of divination, also known as sortilege, a term that also gives us the root word for sorcery. The easiest way of doing this is to simply write down all the options you have for a particular choice, place them in a container of some kind, and pray for divinatory guidance from a spirit or divinity of your choice. Then you'll shake the container until a lot, one of the written options, falls out. Or alternatively, reach in and pull out one, and that will reveal your best option. Many people also use dice to do this divination, assigning specific meanings to the different potential numerical outcomes, then shaking and rolling the dice to see what turns up. The I Ching system sometimes uses a lot-style system in which yarrow stalks are inscribed with symbols that are tied to hexagrams or different configurations of the oracle, which reveal information when the corresponding passage of a book is read. Even a coin flip can be a form of sortilege or lot casting, although most often there are more than two choices available. If you want to make something like a more permanent lot casting system, runes or sigils can be inscribed onto a number of stones or wooden pieces, then added to a bag and shaken, with the ones that spell out providing the necessary answers. You want a more contemporary version? You can make a lot casting system by buying a used or old Scrabble game or two from yard sales or thrift shops, then adding all the letters to a bag. Shake out the preset number of letters and see if they could potentially have any meaning when put together. Voila! Sortilege for the modern age. Our witch's proverb of the month. If you look the right way, you can see that the whole world is a garden. From Frances Hodgson Burnett. Our folktale of the month is actually a game. It's one you may be familiar with. I'll read you the first bit of it, and then I'll tell you some variations and a little bit of history about it. London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down. London Bridge is falling down, my fair lady. What did the robber do to you? Do to you, do to you. What did the robber do to you, my fair lady? He broke my watch and stole my keys. Stole my keys, stole my keys. He broke my watch and stole my keys, my fair lady. Then off to prison she must go. She must go, she must go. Then off to prison she must go, my fair lady. That version is one recorded in Savannah, Georgia, in William Wells Newell's book Games and Songs of American Children. There are other versions as well, found in various schools in both European and American sources. So, for example, you might instead say, Instead of saying then off to prison she must go, you might say something about London Bridge falling down and then ask, how shall we build it up again, up again, up again? And carry forward saying, build it up with lime and stone, stone and lime will wash away, build it up with iron bars would bend and break, and so forth and so on. Newell notes that as to the origins of this remarkable game, our citations have already made clear that one of its features consists of a representation of the antagonism of celestial and infernal powers, and the final decision by which each soul is assigned a place on one side or another. Newell's supposition about the dichotomy of afterlives aside, this game is often used as a way for children to interact with one another and play, but there is a story embedded in this. We have the story of a famous bridge, its destruction, and its rising again. Many people think that this game is related in some way to something like the London Fire, for example, although that is not entirely proven. Games like these frequently involve some aspect of narrative or some sort of storytelling that have been embedded within the game itself. So when we play a game like this, we're actually participating in a story. This month, we chose a game rather than a story because it's springtime, and children are getting outside and playing together more. Or at least, we hope they are in places where the weather is warmed enough to do so. But also, as we noted, a game can sometimes be a story. Many games are rooted in stories or rituals, and by playing them, we can immerse ourselves in that narrative. The game of chess, famously, was used for a long time as a way to teach strategic thinking for military commanders because it allowed for those playing to think about battle in a symbolic way. Games also feature in stories often, as in some of the clever Jack tales where the titular hero, usually a soldier coming home from war, finds himself in a card game against supernatural forces. By besting them, he gains power over them and can command them. In so many stories involving tricking the devil, the tale resembles a game where the protagonist must exploit a loophole or sneakily cheat to win against a nearly impossible foe. Think only of Rumpelstiltskin and the game of guessing his name. The cost of losing was the sacrifice of a firstborn child, so perhaps cheating wasn't so wrong after all. I often do my readings with playing cards because I enjoy how they feel like something anyone would have, but there's also a sense in which we live our lives a bit like a game. One we can shuffle and deal and try to win, or at the very least, try not to lose. One of the great things about the game, though, is that we can learn from our mistakes and try again. We can redirect the narrative and change our luck in a moment. Plus, even more importantly, games teach us the value of play. We need to play, because it helps us work through things we're dealing with in situations where the stakes are lower than life and death. Well, maybe not if we're guessing the secret names of imps who are after our children, but you're not likely to have that problem over losing a round of Monopoly or Scrabble. This month, I invite you to think about games you like to play, and what stories they might help you tell. Can you see a game as a sort of ritual? Something you can work into magic? Maybe that Mahjong tile can help you think about a good luck opportunity you've got. Or the roll of a pair of dice before you head around the board could give you some numbers to work with in magic, as we mentioned in our bit on sortilege. Go on and play with your magic this month. Have a little fun, work a little charm, and roll the dice. We'll finish up our notebook entry with a little charm or craft each month to add a practical element to your work. This time around, the mummy jar. Some people may have heard of a sweetening jar or a souring jar even, but what about a mummy jar? The act of preserving magical items using drying or salting has a long history. In medieval Europe, for example, a product called mummia was frequently offered by apothecaries for treatments of everything from sores and ulcers to dizziness and nausea. This product was made from the powdered remnants of mummy skin. Initially, that skin came from pillaged Egyptian mummies, although eventually demand grew so fast that the bodies of those who died without arrangements for their disposal would be preserved and mummified solely to make mummia powder. Offhanded cannibalism aside, there are other examples of similar practices in North American folk magic. Calls, the amniotic membrane found over the heads of some newborns, were frequently dried and preserved to be sold to sailors as charms against drowning. And eel skins were sold in Massachusetts fish markets well into the late 19th century, so they could be mummified and turned into garters or belts to prevent or treat rheumatism. And of course, there's the infamous Hand of Glory, which is a convicted criminal's hand, pickled and preserved to be used for nefarious magical purposes. One skill that can be very useful then for a practicing witch is making a mummy jar, which can be used to preserve and desiccate various organic materials for use in magic, or even used as a way to fix or preserve someone and bind them from doing things the magician doesn't want. In my own practice, I've used mummy jars to preserve things like chicken feet, found in some grocery stores, or rabbit feet, taken from already deceased animals who were then lovingly buried. These parts were then crafted into charms, like a hex removal chicken foot charm or a lucky rabbit's foot. To make a mummy jar, you need a fairly large jar that can be emptied and filled easily. A large mason jar is good for this. You'll also need a lot of salt. You can use several kinds, ranging from table salt to rock salt, but you will want at least most of it to be sand grain size or smaller. The process is very simple. Fill the jar partway with salt, add your cleaned and towel-dried item to the jar, and then cover it completely with more salt. Put a bit of folded cheesecloth over the mouth of the jar and secure it with a ring lid or rubber band, then set in a cool, dry place away from direct light or additional moisture. You'll need to check the jar pretty regularly, especially in the first few days. If liquid is forming on the top or bottom of the jar, empty it all out, pat the item being preserved to dry again, and make the jar once more, repeating until no moisture forms. This method can be used with roots and plants, although they are often delicate and should be preserved carefully to avoid breakage. Drying them is often easier, but a mummy jar can make a great preserving tool for larger botanical specimens. You can also add bits of ingredients, like a few crumbled rose petals or a pinch of cinnamon to a jar, if you're working to mummify a tool to use in a fast love spell, for example. Don't do too much, or you may wind up with a mess, but a pinch or two mingled in can be a great boost to the spell. If you want to use the jar itself as the spell, you can always add the dry ingredients, like preserved botanicals and spices representing your goal, ashes from petition papers, black salt, or other ingredients to the jar. Then put your representation of your target into the jar, just like you would if you were preserving something. You could add a poppet, or a name paper for example, or even a business card you took from them. In this case, you'll want to shake the jar every few days, and speak your intended effects or any verbal charms that you might be using to do so. It will work a little bit like a souring jar, only it essentially freezes the target's behavior and their life in place, binding them from any bad behaviors. Use your mummy jar responsibly, and remember that if you see any moisture, clean it out and start again. Happy mummifying! That's it for this entry into your New World Witchery Folk Magician's Notebook for this month. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope that you are having a marvelous beginning to your spring if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, or your fall if you're in the Southern Hemisphere. If you like this show, you want to help support us, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/newworldwitchery, throwing $1 a month and or whatever you can afford into our hat, and maybe get some nice little perks on the side as well, including access to our Discord server, several dozen, I think, at this point, shows that are for Patreons only, and all sorts of other little things as well. We've got lots of little stuff that comes out to our patrons, so... And if you would like to share your thoughts on this episode or any other, you can do so by emailing us at compassandkey@gmail.com or at newworldwitcherypodcast@gmail.com. Both of those will reach us. If you want to find out more about us, what we're doing, where we're going to be, and anything else about us, you can visit newworldwitchery.com/find-us. And of course, you can just visit the website, newworldwitchery.com, to find all of our episodes and over 200 articles on various aspects of North American folk magic. It's growing all the time. We try to add to that, and hopefully you can find something that you're looking for there. Lots of interesting stuff is in there. So that will do it for us this time around. We really appreciate you joining us. We hope that your month is off to a great start, and we'll talk to you again soon. Until then, thanks for listening. Be well.